वंश कपटरूप्यस्चा पिपसिंधु वैवचा तितनं पविनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। We've heard quite a dramatic pastime or activity. Sometimes, although we may say this is quite an incredible story, but sometimes Prabhupada would object to the word story being used, because story at times can apply something that's fictitious. And certainly Prabhupada insisted on the literal acceptance of the pastimes, or we can say stories, within the Bhagavatam. So this story is quite incredible. It is wonderful. In contemporary phraseology, it is awesome. Because what happened? There was a sacrifice going on, a Vedic sacrifice, and the atmosphere was auspicious. And then a powerful person walked in, Daksha, who was very, very effulgent, and everyone was also astounded by his personal power. He had charisma, and everyone stood up to offer him respect, except for two personalities, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. Daksha accepted that Lord Brahma, being his father, didn't have to stand up and offer him respect, but Lord Shiva was his son-in-law, even though Lord Shiva was actually much more powerful than he, much more realized, potent, a greater personality than he. So Daksha did not accept that Lord Shiva should not stand up. He saw it as a breach of etiquette, and due to his pride in his position, he became very, very angry. And actually that anger was an exhibition of his envy. His envy of Daksha, of Lord Shiva. And he cursed, he criticized and then cursed Lord Shiva in the presence of everyone. The followers of Lord Shiva became angry in return and cursed Daksha and his followers, and then the Brahmin followers, supporters of Daksha, cursed the followers of Lord Shiva. And then Lord Shiva just walked out, completely neutral and indifferent. Later on, Daksha held another sacrifice. And in that other sacrifice, Sati, the wife of Lord Shiva, the daughter of Daksha, desired to go. And against Lord Shiva's good advice and instruction, she decided to go anyway. Lord Shiva said, "You will see horrible things happen. Your father will not respect you simply because you are my wife, because of your relationship to me, and that will be so painful to you." So in fact, Sati went anyway, and that exact thing happened. Daksha didn't respect her, wouldn't even offer her one word of welcome. And Sati noticed that Lord Shiva was not being respected in the sacrifice, and therefore she decided to criticize her father, and ultimately, through her own yogic power, to give up her own body. She committed suicide. At that time, the followers of Lord Shiva, who had accompanied her, tried to hurt Daksha, but they were protected by the potency of Bhrigu Muni, a great teacher. So they went back frustrated and brought Lord Shiva the news that his wife had immolated herself. Did I get it right? Immolated herself. She had killed herself. So Lord Shiva was furious. Oh, was he angry. He is actually the personification of the mode of ignorance. in this world. He is the guna avatar, empowered. So when he becomes angry, no one can become as angry as him. And factually, his anger is capable of destroying the entire universe. So he became so angry, and out of his anger, he created a personification of anger. A great, powerful, ghostly person, huge, named Virbhadra, who, with the other followers of Shiva, went to the sacrifice and completely destroyed it and wreaked havoc and specifically cut off Daksha's head for his offense and his causing, although indirectly one can say, but still he was the cause. Due to his offensive nature and enmity with Lord Shiva, he caused the death of Sati. And the followers of Lord Shiva also put out the eyes, ripped off the mustache of other of the participants in the sacrifice, and broke arms and legs and defiled the whole sacrificial area. The other participants in the sacrifice that survived, they realized they had committed a great offense by disturbing the powerful Lord Shiva, and they consulted with Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma went with them to apologize to Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma spoke very, very sweetly and very reverently to Lord Shiva and requested that he write those things that he had created havoc with. And Lord Shiva replied that his anger was, yes, it was anger, but it was anger with affection. The difference between anger for its own sake and anger with affection is that anger for its own sake wishes harm to the others, and anger with affection, like a parent's anger with a child, with their child, is meant more for the rectification and teaching of a beloved. So in this way, Lord Shiva described his anger. And then he said he would rectify everything, but not exactly as it was before. And indeed, Daksha, instead of getting his own head back, was the proud owner of the head of a goat, where his head previously was. And Bhrigu Muni, instead of having his beautiful mustache back, ended up with the beard of the goat. And in this way, everyone was reminded to be very careful in dealing with powerful Lord Shiva or any other powerful person, and especially not have enmity or envy of them, jealousy of them for their position, if their position is superior to ours. So, after Lord Shiva righted things, they began the sacrifice again. This time, very carefully, they invited Lord Shiva. And by his grace, everything was done properly. And as soon as Daksha came back, he was brought back to life by accepting the head of a goat. And then they began to offer oblations or make offerings into the sacrificial fire. And because sacrifices are ultimately or directly meant for the pleasure of God, of Vishnu, Krishna, then the Lord, being pleased with the sacrificial performance, now he was pleased. He himself appeared, Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan appeared. And everyone was thrilled, because after so much tribulation, so much distress, so much havoc, so much violence, now the very emblem of goodness, of purity, the Lord himself had appeared. And everyone was so pleased that he was so beautiful. And everyone, including Lord Shiva, offered their obeisances to him. And then, and this is where we're up to right now, in this incredible pastime, in chapter 7, text 24, the personalities who were present, who were all very powerful persons, they began to offer obeisances and prayers to the Lord who had just appeared, so effulgent, so clearly the Supreme Person. Now, just like in a classroom, and a classroom that subject is say history. Regardless of the fact that it may be either a first grade or a university grade classroom, there is always going to be gradations of people with knowledge and realization about what history really means. To some people, all history means just the memorization of dates. To some people, they can see the workings of the social factors determining the political factors. And other people will see actually the hand of God in it. So if each person would express a realization, those realizations, even though the same historical event may be being discussed, the realizations expressed would be different according to the words would be different according to the realization of the person. So here, in this assembly of great people, the Lord has just appeared, and each of them, according to the depths, or depending on what metaphor we want to use, or the heights of their realization, they will express their understanding of God. So there'll be many verses of these. And we will hear, interestingly enough, how they fit together. We'll hear the individual realizations and understand they are coming from specific personalities and according to one's own vision, one's own consciousness. Atmavan manyate jagat. According to one's own mind, we see the world. Even in contemporary psychological terminology, this factor is given in the concept of projection. That one projects one's mind upon others and the world, and indeed, even our realizations of the Supreme Lord, unless we are 100% pure and free, and unless actually we have His mercy, or to put it another way, according to how much we have His mercy, He reveals a certain amount to us. In other words, our mind will determine what we see in God. So therefore, in the Vedas it is said, raso vaisa, which means that He is the reservoir, the Lord, Krishna, is the reservoir of all relationships, of all realizations, of all rasa, mellows. So according to our vision, or another way of looking at it, according to how He wishes to reciprocate with our consciousness, our vision, our mind, then we will have a different one realization about the Supreme as another. Some people are very angry at God. Why is that? Some people are very, very fearful of God. Some people are very loving of God. Some people look at God as the one who bestows material wealth on them. Some people look at Him as the great problem solver or the something like that. Or some people look at Him as the great reservoir of wonderful activities or so powerful. So this has to do with their minds on one hand, and on the other hand, the reciprocation of Krishna with their minds, revealing as much as their mind is demanding. So that brings up many, many interesting topics. And these verses one after another that we will discuss individually and also as a series. It brings up so many interesting points come up, but perhaps the most interesting point or question is if God is reciprocating with us according to our desire, our mind, But what is he ultimately? What is he in his ultimate revelation? Because what we're talking about really is revelation. What is he, the ultimate revelation of Krishna? And that will not be discussed here, nor will it be discussed. This is the fourth canto and the fifth canto. It won't be discussed in the fifth canto. There will be succeeding possible depths of realizations given as one type of mentality after another will be revealed. And then ultimately in the tenth canto of this great Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate revelation of the Supreme Lord is given. And that is Krishna. And that is the Supreme Lord acting as he would like to act in the most satisfying situation for him. That means the most intimately connected with his loving devotees. And that will be, that is Brajendranandana Krishna or Vrindavan Krishna. And it is actually the most amazing thing, because it is very human-like, but it is most amazing. Because the rasa or the relationship that one can have with God is most intimate there. And that's how everything is judged, by the intimacy. And it's clear that when we look at God, if we look at him as the great powerful one, the creator, we have to be like this, and we're always some afraid. So does that allow for great intimacy and love? Certainly there is love and respect and awe and reverence, but it is not intimate. So that, and the example that is often given is like a king or a president, say a king. So the subjects or the prisoners know him in one way. In fact, they may even think of him as an enemy. And the law-abiding citizens see him another way, very fatherly. And the members of the court see him in a still more intimate way. The same person, all one person, possessing great power, one person, but just seen differently according to the mentalities and the situation of the citizens. So the members of the court see him in one way. The friends he went to school with see him in a completely different way. They know he's the king, maybe, and sometimes, but then and in front of everyone else they have to be reverential, but then they can go and see him and tease him and remember this and slap him on the back and have a joke with him. And his parents see him in another way. No matter how powerful he is, they see him as a little boy. Is the nature of parenthood. And his wives see him as in a completely different way. So who has the most intimate relationship with him? Certainly the family members have such an so far different relationship with him. They know he's the king, they sometimes forget he's the king. So completely different and intimate and full of love and of a different variety than certainly the ordinary citizens, what to speak of the criminals in the society who look at him as the cause of their problems because they're in a prison. So by the tenth canto, after we hear the entirety of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and hopefully purified by applying this and hearing it, then we will hear in the tenth canto about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his preferred dealings with his devotees. So now we won't hear that, but yet the Lord has appeared in his Vishnu form, powerful form, and everyone will express their realizations. All those will express their realizations. So here's the first verse, not a prayer, but there's some preamble. Although the mental scope of even demigods like Brahma, was unable to comprehend the unlimited glories of the Supreme Lord. No one can understand him completely because he is unlimited. We are limited by what he reveals to us. This doesn't mean that he is unknowable. He is unknowable completely, fully, but he is knowable in as much as he wishes to reveal to us, and that will be according to our consciousness. So no one, even Lord Brahma, was able to comprehend the unlimited glories of the Supreme Lord. They were all able to perceive the transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his grace. Only by such grace could they offer their respectful prayers according to their different capacities. I will read Prabhupada's purport. There's good instruction in here for us, so we should listen carefully. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is always unlimited, and his glories cannot be completely enumerated by anyone, even by a personality like Lord Brahma. It is said that Ananta, a direct incarnation of the Lord, has unlimited mouths. And with each mouth, he has been trying to describe the Lord, the glories of the Lord, for an unlimited span of time. Yet, the glories of the Lord remain unlimited, and he therefore never finishes. It is not possible for any ordinary living entity to understand or to glorify the unlimited personality of Godhead. But one can offer prayers or service to the Lord according to one's particular capacity. This capacity, so naturally, we would like to increase our capacity. That's the natural desire that should come. Why stay in the prison house and appreciating God in that way only? Let's move closer. So the natural question is, how could I increase my capacity? This capacity is increased by the service spirit. So that's actually the difference. It is not something arbitrary imposed by Krishna, but rather what one's realization of Krishna is, isn't something arbitrary imposed by the Lord, but rather it is a reciprocation from Krishna according to the exercise of our free will of the desire to serve him or be independent from him. So it is the capacity to be with Krishna or to understand Krishna, to love him, is increased by the serving spirit. So the next question is, so the intimacy is a function of the serving spirit, and what is the serving spirit a function of? It is has to do with our free will, but how can we increase it? Sevan mukhi jivado means, so that is a verse, Swayam eva sparatyada, means that the service of the Lord begins with the tongue. This refers to chanting. By chanting Hare Krishna, one begins the service of the Lord. Another function of the tongue is to taste and accept the Lord's prasad, spiritual food. So we have to begin our service to the unlimited with the tongue and become perfect. We have to begin our service to the unlimited with the tongue, which has two functions: speaking, vibrating sound, and tasting. And so that's the beginning. And we have to become perfect in chanting and accepting the Lord's prasad. To accept the Lord's prasad or mercy means to control the entire set of senses. The tongue is considered to be the most uncontrollable sense, because it hankers for so many unwholesome eatables, thereby forcing the living entity into the dungeon of material conditional life. We were just describing our position as bahiyamukh, jiva bahiyamukh, or against Krishna, and therefore we are placed in the prison house of material life, the dungeon. And what's the nature of a dungeon? What picture comes up to your mind when you think of a dungeon? Is it a nice place? What is the main function of a dungeon? What do you think of? Suffering, captivity, yes. And by definition, captivity means suffering. Somewhere I heard recently, because there's a new tendency in modern society, they have, if you, instead of putting you in a jail if you commit certain types of crimes, they place you under house arrest, and then they put some kind of a band around you, and they put some electronic things around the house, and you can't go outside those boundaries, or the police come very quickly or something like that with their weapons. They're immediately notified. So what I read said that people suffer more under house arrest than being in prison, especially if their family and everything is there, because it's in a familiar circumstance where they're used to being free, and yet they're completely bound. It's the illusion of freedom, but with such definite boundaries that it's torture in a different way. So regardless of where we are, it could be in our own house, we could be in a palace, if we are restricted, if we are in captivity, if our freedom is restricted, it's suffering and torture. So therefore, the situation within a material body, no matter the soul in a material body, the soul wants is naturally freedom-loving. Just by having a material body, whether we have a king's body or a wretched body, it is suffering because it is so restricted. So, by the point that Prabhupada was making, that if we eat abominable things, horrible things, and people do eat the most horrible things, horrible, 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 horrible things, the result of that, the karma from that, is that we are placed into horrible bodies which are deeper dungeons, deepest dungeons, where our freedom is restricted still more. Still more. As the living entity, so the dungeon of material conditioned life, what a powerful metaphor. As the living entity transmigrates from one form of life to another, he has to eat so many abominable foodstuffs, and finally there is no limit. Meaning that people... Anyway, no need to talk about that. The tongues should be engaged, on the other hand, to increase our freedom. To increase our freedom means freedom to serve Krishna, which means our capacity to love Krishna, which means our intimacy with Him. The tongue should be engaged in chanting and eating the Lord's prasad so that the other senses will be controlled. Chanting is the medicine and prasad is the diet. With these processes, one can begin his service, and as the service increases, the Lord reveals more and more to the devotee. So what does it mean that the service increases? Does that mean that we should simply do more and more and bigger and double it and triple it and quadruple it? We'll pop, we'll explode if we just look at it like that. But what has to increase is the serving mood, the serving spirit, the serving desire, which is a product of our appreciation and love for Krishna, the depth of our relationship with Him. And when the external manifestation of that is based on the internal increase, then it is substantial. Then there won't be any burstings and surprise explosions and leakages. The external must be based upon the increase of the internal. There's a relationship between the two that is dynamic. Sometimes we are placed by Krishna in a position where we have to increase our external, and that puts so much pressure on us to increase the internal. And sometimes the internal is increased and we're longing for a field in which to express that. So it is dynamic, it is not static. So, as the service increases, the serving mood increases, the Lord reveals more and more to the devotee. So one cannot understand without revelation. The word revelation means reveal. It is revealed, it is coming down. Knowledge about Krishna. So, but in any case, no matter how much he reveals, which is again a function of the serving spirit of the devotee, there's still, aside from that, there is no limit to his glories, and there is no limit to engaging oneself in the service of the Lord. So, a very wonderful purport by Prabhupada. So, everyone was offering prayers according to their different capacity. When Lord Vishnu accepted the oblations offered in the sacrifice, Daksha, the Prajapati, began with great pleasure to offer respectful prayers unto him. So he was so happy to see the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the master of all sacrifices and the preceptor of all the Prajapatis. So he is the instructor of all those universal progenitors or generators of population. And the Lord is served even by such personalities, Nanda and Sunanda. So Daksha is the first one we're going to hear. And in a word, he's going to express his realization of the Lord. And that word is that he is beyond. So Daksha addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My dear Lord, you are transcendental to all speculative positions. No one can understand you by their own mental powers. Beyond it. Beyond what anyone can imagine from here in this world. You are completely spiritual. That means non-material. You're spiritual, but what experience do we have of spiritual to know what that actually means? It's beyond our experience. You're devoid of all fear. And you are always in control of the material energy, again, because you are beyond the control of the material energy. Even though you appear in the material energy, you are situated transcendentally. You are here in this world, Daksha said, but actually, you are beyond this world. You are transcendental. You are always free from material contamination because you are completely self-sufficient. Very interesting. You are free from material contamination because you are self-sufficient. That means, how do we get entangled in the material world? Because we want something. We want to enjoy something. So wanting to enjoy something, grabbing something in the material world, trying to squeeze some pleasure from it, what does that imply? It implies that we are lacking something. As soon as we say want, I want this, that means we lack it. That's like a person who puts their pen in their mouth. So they wouldn't be thinking, I want to put the pen in my mouth when it's already in my mouth. It's just because they have it. So they're thinking, oh, only if I could put my pen in my mouth. It's because they're feeling some unsatisfaction somewhere deep within their soul and psyche. But when someone is self-sufficient and actually self-satisfied, they don't desire any, they don't need, they don't have that need, essential need, to want to exploit the material world, and they're free of material contamination. So Krishna is self-sufficient. That means he is Atmaram. Atmaram is Chamunajo, Nagrantapi Nurukrame. He doesn't require anything from the material world, because he is self-sufficient, and therefore he is free from all material contamination. As soon as there is desire on our part, we will try, either subtly or grossly, to fulfill that desire in the realm of matter. And that is what it means to be a conditioned soul. And we always get not what we want. We get something other than what we want, something that gives birth to so many other desires. So he's seeing, Daksha is seeing Krishna as beyond his ability to understand, beyond the speculative position. You're completely spiritual, but you are beyond fear. And Daksha actually was afraid, and that's why he criticized Lord Shiva, because he was afraid that Lord Shiva was better than him. Typical type of fear, that someone may be better than us. And what is the problem if one feels like that? You're always afraid because there are so many people better than you. So, and then all kinds of reactions, trying to make believe that I don't have this problem, I don't have this need, that I'm not lacking anything, that I'm so wonderful, bluffing everyone, and everyone sees it, and afraid that people are going to see it, in so many ways, going crazy, entangled in the material world. Fear. Always in control of the material energy. How Krishna is different than us. And even though in the material world, not actually in the material world, above the material world, completely self-sufficient. So that was Daksha's prayer. Krishna is beyond. Now the priests of the sacrifice, the Ritviks, actually, that's what Ritvik means, an officiating priest, addressed the Lord, saying, "O Lord," this is their prayer, "transcendental to material contamination," same principle, actually saying that, free from material contamination, saying the same thing, "transcendental to material contamination. By the curse offered by Lord Shiva's men, we have become attached to fruitive activities, materialistic activities. And thus, we are now fallen, and therefore do not know anything about you. On the contrary, we are now involved in the injunctions of the three departments of Vedic knowledge under the plea of executing rituals in the name of Jagya sacrifice. We know that you have made arrangements for distributing the respective shares of the demigods. So he is beyond. So what? So to know that the Lord is beyond is one thing. That is better than thinking there is no God, or he is in the material world, he is the same as us, something like that. So to know that he is beyond is one thing, but it is not knowledge. And it is that is satisfying to the heart, nor is it love or relationship. Because how can you have something, a relationship, that all your relationship is just at the beyond, there's something other than you. And you know nothing other than them but that, nothing about them other than that. So it's not a very satisfying platform. So what keeps us from getting closer? It is what they say. They describe their materialism. So, due to attachment to matter, and they're saying it was the curse of the followers of Lord Shiva that occurred early in the sacrifice. And truly, attachment to matter, thinking that material things are going to make us happy, it is truly a curse that's very hard to remove. And it blocks our vision. And it fills us with so many other desires, all of which cannot satisfy us. And just knowing this does not remove them either. So very, very difficult. It is a real curse. Because of their involvement with matter, they don't know anything. They're entangled in the material world and don't know much about Krishna, the Supreme Lord, at all. And that matter, interestingly enough, is coming not through gross materialism, as we would think, but rather through matter, materialistic desires in the form of religion. They are priests in the sacrifice. So wanting material fruit from religious practices covers the Lord from our vision. And what is the result of someone who is involved and attached to matter? Next prayer. These are the sadasyas, the members of the assembly. I'm not exactly sure who they are, but there they are. And this is their realization. O exclusive shelter for all who are situated in troubled life. So there, this is a very nice point. That if all those who are situated in troubled life, more or less everyone, this everyone. But he is the shelter for those who are situated in troubled life. In this formidable fort of conditional existence, the time element, which is just like an elephant, because an elephant is so powerful and it crushes everyone. The time elephant, like a snake, it also has... The time element, like a snake, is always looking for an opportunity to strike. This world is full of ditches of so-called distress and happiness, and there are many ferocious animals always ready to attack. The fire of lamentation is always blazing. So this is the saying we are. This is our situation in the material world, which is a result of our attachment to matter. It is blazing. The time element, like a serpent, is ready to strike. And no one, and there it's not like a serpent puts a placard or a shingle outside where he is and says, "Serpent here, beware." No, you never know when you're walking in a desert or something like that, or in some foresty area. You don't know where the serpents are. They don't advertise. And that means that you don't know when you're going to get bitten. And there are very ferocious, dangerous, poisonous snakes around. So the world is full of ditches of so-called distress and happiness that people fall into and don't recover from. And there are many ferocious animals always ready to attack. This is the result of our material attachments. The fire of lamentation is always blazing, another result of material attachment. Why is lamentation a result of material attachment?
To materialize the name of the folk.
Yeah. And you always, what is lamentation? What does it mean to you? Where, is it forward looking or backward looking?
Backward.
Oh, only if, and on and on and on. Only if this would have happened, and only if that would have happened, and only this, and why didn't I do that? In this way, it's a fire. It burns us. It drives people crazy, literally. It's an endless record or tape. I'm so old, I know what a record is. Tape or an endless CD. And we'll all be able to say, "I'm so old, I know what a tape is." We'll see what happens in a few years. If
DVD.
Excuse me?
DVD.
Yes. DVD. What is DVD?
Digital videos.
Yes. It's an endless one. Just going on. This is much better because it's visual also. Only if I did this and lamenting and only if that, I should have told him this and I would have told her that and on and on and on. The fire of lamentation is always blazing. And we are stuck in that fire. And the mirage of false happiness is always alluring. But no one, but one has no shelter from them. Thus foolish persons live in the cycle of birth and death, always overburdened in discharging their so-called duties. And we do not know when they will accept the shelter of your lotus feet. There's some wonderful purports in these. Here's a short one by Prabhupada. So there's one special one that I picked out that we won't get to today, I think. But I'll bring it up. But this was the one I was thinking of when we come to it, hopefully tomorrow. Here's Prabhupada's purport to this. So that's the result of the being covered by material attachment. Prabhupada's short purport. Persons who are not in Krishna consciousness are living a very precarious life as described in this verse. But all these circumstantial conditions are due to forgetfulness of Krishna. So naturally we understand what the cure of these of that is. It's remembrance of Krishna. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant to give relief to all these bewildered and distressed persons. Therefore, it is the greatest relief work for all human society, and the workers thereof are the greatest well-wishers, for they follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, who is the greatest friend to all living entities. So that gives us something to aspire to be. Prabhupada spoke like that, and then we, at least I can speak for myself, look at myself and see myself so poor-hearted and selfish and not at all the greatest friend to all living beings and the greatest well-wisher. So it's that's something to lament about. If I can deal with that, then there may be some hope to move forward. The last one that we'll be able to read tonight. So what is the result, the next result that comes from this attachment, or what to do? What does, again, this is the opposite position actually, because Lord Shiva is so advanced. Lord Shiva said, "My dear Lord, my mind and consciousness are always fixed on your lotus feet, which are the source of all benediction and the fulfillment of all desires. Are worshipped by all liberated great sages because your lotus feet are worthy of worship. With my mind fixed on your lotus feet, I am no longer disturbed by persons who blaspheme me, claiming that my activities are not purified. I do not mind their accusations, and I excuse them out of compassion, just as you exhibit compassion towards all living entities." Prabhupada's purport. Lord Shiva expresses herein his regret at having been angry and having disturbed the sacrificial activities of Daksha. King Daksha had insulted him in many ways, and thus he had become angry and had frustrated the entire sacrificial ceremony. Later, when he was pleased, the jaga performance was reinstituted, and therefore he regretted his activities. Now he says that because his mind is fixed on the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, he is no longer disturbed by the ordinary critics of his way of life. From this statement by Lord Shiva, it is understood that as long as one is on the material platform, one is affected by the three modes of material nature. As soon as one is in Krishna consciousness, however, one is no longer affected by such material activities. One should therefore always be fixed in Krishna consciousness, busy in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. It is guaranteed that such a devotee will never be affected by the actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. This fact is also corroborated in the Bhagavad Gita. Anyone who is fixed in transcendental service of the Lord has surpassed all the material qualities and is situated in the status of Brahman realization, in which one is not afflicted by hankering for material objects. So here is the conclusion of this part. This is the solution. The conclusion is the solution to the miserable condition that has been described and we may find ourselves within. Here's the conclusion. The recommendation of the Srimad Bhagavatam is that one should always be Krishna conscious and should never forget his transcendental relationship with the Lord. This program has to be followed strictly by everyone. From the statement of Lord Shiva, it is understood that he was always in Krishna consciousness, and thus he remained free from material affliction. The only remedy, therefore, is to continue Krishna consciousness rigidly in order to get out of contamination of the material modes. But rigidly means fixedly. If we're fixed in this point of remembrance of Krishna, then the rest of our life will not be rigid. We'll be free. If we affix strictly, follow strictly as a must, as this is what we must do, then we will be free people, free personalities, because we will be free from the real bondage, the real entrapment, the real prison. And that is being in the material world altogether. And even if one is in the material world superficially, externally, if one is always remembering Krishna, he is actually beyond the material world. And we see that this is the common point of every sage, every holy person, regardless of religion. They are always fixed in remembrance of the Lord and dependence on Him. Okay, we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Well, the next one is the one that I wanted to speak on, I think, Bhrigu Muni's prayer. So tomorrow we'll begin with that.